When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Hi, I'm Nora Cavani, and this is Healthy Gut, Healthy Kids, your trusted source on child gut health, brought to you by Alba Health, live on the UK Health Radio. Thousands of studies now link a child's gut health to common symptoms like colic, constipation, and eczema, as well as to long-term health risks like allergies, asthma, and obesity. In each episode, I speak with global experts and scientists to explore the latest research on children's nutrition, gut health, and well-being. Let's dive into the science. Did you know that the gut microbiome, the collection of microbes in our gut, is incredibly important during childhood? It helps develop a child's immune system, metabolism, and even cognition. But some factors, like C-section birth and antibiotics, can disrupt the delicate balance of the gut microbiome in these early years, and they have been associated with conditions like asthma, allergies, and obesity. C-section and antibiotics can save lives and can be very needed. So, scientists are looking into ways to restore the gut microbiome after C-section and antibiotics. Welcome to today's episode of Healthy Gut, Healthy Kids. I'm your host, Nora Cavani, and today we are excited to have Dr. Katri Korpela, a leading researcher in the field of gut microbiota. Dr. Korpela's groundbreaking work has shaped how we understand the role of gut microbiota in early life. She's explored key factors that affect the infant microbiome and how it can be restored for better immune function and long-term health, especially after C-section and antibiotics. In this episode, we will be diving into what is known about the effects of C-section and antibiotics on the child gut microbiome and what could be potential ways to restore it. Welcome, Katri.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation.
Let's start with what inspired you to start researching the gut microbiota and why did you choose to focus in early life?
I was originally from my training an ecologist, an animal ecologist, but I was also interested in human health. And then I discovered the field of gut microbiota. And I realized that that is the ecosystem that is actually the most relevant and the closest to us in terms of our health. So it was really the perfect blend of ecology and human health and medical science that really attracted me to it.
That's fantastic. And what is the gut microbiota, to explain it in simple terms?
So in our intestinal tract, we have a lot of microorganisms. Mainly it's bacteria, but it's also viruses and fungi. Many different kinds of microbes, and they together make up the gut microbiota.
And now we know it's very important for our health, but it seems to be even more important during the first years of life. Why is that?
During the first months and years of our life, our physiology really develops. And we think now that the first years are important because it's sort of this sort of programming happens where our body learns how to cope with different things and learns, basically it gets programmed into a certain type of responsiveness to many different things that will then affect long-term health much, much later in life. So we think that the early life is very important for determining the pattern of growth and development and physiology and health risks in later life. So that's why the early life is so important.
And how does it develop? Are we born with it? Where does it come from?
So the gut microbiota, we are not, we don't have a gut microbiota or any kind of microbial exposure before we are born. Birth is really the time when we acquire our first microbes. And the first microbes that we are in contact with come from during the passage through the vaginal birth canal. But what we have discovered is that when we talk about the gut microbiota, that it's really the maternal gut microbes that we acquire during vaginal delivery. So it was previously thought that vaginal birth is so important for the gut microbiota because you babies would acquire vaginal microbes. But this is not the case because vaginal microbes, they are adapted to that kind of environment, not to the gut environment. So we acquire during birth maternal, essentially fecal microbes. And we can sort of see birth as the only instance in life when this sort of fecal microbial transplantation from one person to another happens naturally. And that's why birth is so important, because you cannot replicate that same event ever again in your life. It's a unique microbial transmission event that happens only once in a person's life.
Is that the main factor that determines what the gut microbiota of the child will be?
That is the first and initially the most important factor, because the microbes that you are initially exposed to will, of course, be the ones that colonize, and they will then kind of regulate the further development of the microbiota. So it is extremely important which microbes you are initially exposed to. But of course, then time passes and very many different things happen in life. So other factors like feeding, what diet the infant eats, antibiotic exposure, different things will then start being important as well.
So because birth and the type of birth is so important, what happens during a C-section instead?
So during C-section, obviously the infant has no contact with maternal microbes. The infant is then usually exposed to skin microbes and microbes in the hospital environment generally. But the contact to maternal fecal microbes does not happen. And therefore, the microbes that are able to transmit from the mother to the baby or from the environment to the baby are very different compared to the natural birth situation.
What are the differences? What do we know and see in babies born through C-section?
Yeah, we know actually quite a lot about that because that has been studied quite a lot. So we know that there are specific microbes that are normally transmitted during vaginal birth. It's mostly bifidobacteria and Bacteroides species, which seem to be quite dependent on this transfer from mother to infant during birth. And these bacteria, we know that they are anaerobic, and they do not form spores. So they don't have the capacity to survive transmission through the environment outside of the human body. So they are really reliant on that transmission during birth, and they have a hard time being transmitted afterwards. There are other bacteria that are important and abundant in the gut as well, but these are not as dependent on the initial transmission because they might be spore formers, so they can produce spores that can survive in the oxygenated environment and therefore can be transmitted later in life naturally. But it's really those two groups of bacteria that are very abundant in babies that seem to be very important metabolically because they have certain metabolic capacities that give them the adaptation to thrive in the infant gut and that are adapted to being transmitted from the mother to the baby during birth. And these cannot be transmitted during C-section birth.
Very clear. So during vaginal birth, some of these bacteria that are very important are transmitted from the mother to the child or transferred from the mother to the child. And during C-section, that process is impaired and not happening in the same way. Are there differences in different types of C-section? So you have emergency C-section or planned C-section. There's also the use of antibiotics, sometimes before or after. Are there differences there?
There really are not that big differences between. So it really doesn't seem to make a big difference whether antibiotics were given before or after, or whether it was emergency or planned C-section. Because in the end, what really matters is that all C-sections prevent this contact to maternal fecal microbes, and that's what is needed. So no kind of C-section can replicate that.
And what's the role of antibiotics? Because often C-section goes together with antibiotics. How do we know that it's not the antibiotics that impair this transfer?
Yeah, so there have been actually studies that have looked at that. And we know that it's really not the antibiotic in that case, because the in C-section, it doesn't really matter whether there was antibiotic or not. The contact to the microbes is not there, so they cannot in any case be transmitted. The case is very different for vaginal births, where antibiotics have a really big impact, because a lot of mothers are given antibiotics during delivery. And there, antibiotics do have a big impact. They are typically given to the mother to prevent the transmission of potentially pathogenic bacteria. But of course, they also affect the beneficial bacteria in the same way. So they do prevent the transmission of beneficial bacteria during vaginal birth as well.
And out of curiosity, in a vaginal birth without any antibiotics, are there differences, for example, between birth in water or birth at home or birth in hospital? Do we know that?
There hasn't been that much research on the different aspects of vaginal birth, and this is an interesting question. So, for example, the impact of birth in water, there's really not that much research on that yet. And there's, of course, many different procedures and many different things that can happen during vaginal birth, and we don't really know too much about their effects on the microbial transfer.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And do we know if during vaginal birth, this transfer of bacteria always happens? Or are there instances where that doesn't happen for other reasons?
We really don't know that. So I'm sure there is variation. We know that there is lots of variation in the microbiota composition between infants, even after vaginal delivery. So it is entirely possible and likely that there are certain aspects of vaginal delivery that make it easier or less easy for the microbes to be transmitted. But we really don't know enough about those yet.
That's very interesting as well. Because during C-section, this transfer of bacteria is different, C-section has been associated with conditions and health risks in children later in life? Which ones are those and what do we know?
So far, we really have only kind of correlational evidence. So we can see that after C-section, there are increased risk of overweight and allergic diseases. So we think that it will affect both the metabolic development and also the immunological development of the child, potentially even further physiological development. But of course, it would be very difficult to conduct a watertight experiment on human infants doing this. So what we have is just large-scale epidemiological data showing that there are risks associated with C-section delivery. And the most plausible cause is because of the microbiota differences.
Exactly. Many people argue that there aren't causality studies linking the gut microbiome and health risks later. However, it's very, very difficult to conduct those causality studies. Can you explain why that is?
Yeah, obviously we cannot assign randomly babies into vaginal birth and C-section birth and keep everything else exactly the same. This would be unethical and not possible. However, there are lots of studies now on looking at the impact of probiotics, different types of probiotics given either to the mother or the infant. So from this perspective, we can look at the beneficial effects of restoring or improving the gut microbiota in infants. And there are studies that show that this actually does help in preventing allergic diseases, for example, in the infant. So there is causal evidence. Just from a different, slightly different perspective.
So there are studies that show that after C-section, delivering probiotics or other interventions could actually help in preventing or reducing the risk of diseases. Which diseases?
So most of these studies have been done regarding allergic diseases. So that's where most of the evidence is currently there.
Yes, so an allergic diseases, so food allergy, pollen allergy, asthma.
Yeah.
What about in animals? Are there studies that could show evidence of causality in animals as well?
So animal studies are quite difficult in this respect because there are many differences between mice and humans, and especially when it comes to the gut microbiota, conducting a really valid mouse study that would be relevant to the human situation is extremely difficult. So the whole microbial transfer happens very differently in mice compared to humans. Mice naturally are exposed to their mother's feces after birth. They eat feces, which humans do not. So the entire microbial transfer process in mice is completely different, and therefore it's not really possible to study this in mice. So the most relevant case is really to look at the humans and conduct observational studies in humans, experiments as far as it's possible, large-scale epidemiological studies, and to combine the information from those, which all point to the same direction that the gut microbiota is very important for health.
However, there are some studies that take the gut microbiome from babies born through C-section and transfer it to mice and see some effects on health as well. Are those studies strong enough or indicate anything at this point?
It's very difficult to say whether those really indicate anything relevant to really humans because obviously, the natural mouse gut microbiota is very different from the natural human infant gut microbiota. So the health effects of a human infant gut microbiota in a mouse might not be relevant to the health effects in a human. So they always have to then be interpreted in the context of, well, what have we found in humans? Does this look to be in the same direction, similar? So they can give some indication. But alone, they are definitely not sufficient to say much.
And would you say that all in all, given what we know now with the correlation studies and the intervention studies, that there are reasons to believe that restoring the gut after C-section could be beneficial?
Yes, I think there is sufficient evidence to say that, yeah. And the other way around, you can't really do much harm in restoring a natural gut microbiota. So I think the benefits definitely outweigh the risks.
Because of that, in a lot of hospitals, we're based in Sweden, but also in Denmark, in other Nordic countries, some hospitals try to do what is called swabbing to try to restore the gut microbiome after C-section. What do we know about that?
Yes, so there have been some experimental studies on swabbing the C-section-born infant with the maternal vaginal fluids, thinking that then you will transmit the vaginal microbes to the infant and sort of replicate the microbial exposure that would happen naturally during vaginal birth. However, the vagina is a very poor source of fecal microbes, and therefore we know from studies that the vaginal microbes themselves, they die pretty quickly if they reach the infant gut. They do not colonize it. They can't live there. So it's not the optimal way, definitely. What we know is that what you need to restore is fecal microbes. And those you might find in some cases, sometimes also in the perineal area, and you might then catch them in your vaginal swab, or you might not catch them there. So it's not the optimal way to restore the gut microbiota. And of course, it comes with risks as well. So you are now transmitting microbes whose identities you don't know. There might be pathogenic microbes there as well.
What are the most promising ways to restore the gut after C-section?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
So the situation is actually quite nice already right now. So there are probiotic strains available that we know to be very important for babies that are highly adapted to the infant gut environment, that are known to be safe and that are commercially available, and that can really restore quite a lot of the microbial ecosystem, because those are the key microbes that infants naturally would have. They have the metabolic capacities that give them the ability to utilize breast milk components that really indicate that they are adapted to the infant gut and have the ability to live there. So those would be, I think, right now the most promising way to restore the microbiota, and we do have some evidence that they are effective in restoring the gut microbiota of infants, but also through restoration in preventing allergic disease in C-section born infants.
Fantastic. What are the other ways to do that, if there's any?
So really the best way right now is to use these specific probiotic strains. So specific strains of bifidobacteria that are infant adapted. Other than that, we don't really know what would be the optimal way to support the gut microbiota. Obviously, breastfeeding is essential. So in addition to giving those microbes to the infant, you need to feed the microbes, and breast milk is the essential their food. So without breastfeeding, they probably won't be nearly as beneficial and helpful. So those two things together will probably go really far in restoring the entire gut microbiota ecosystem in C-section born infants.
How does breastfeeding support the gut microbiota in newborns?
So in many ways, obviously breast milk is a very complex living tissue with a lot of different kinds of components in it. One of the most important components is the oligosaccharides that are there specifically to feed certain microbes. So these infant-adapted important gut microbes, especially bifidobacteria species, have the capacity to utilize these breast milk oligosaccharides. So essentially, the mother first gives the infant these specific microbes, and then she feeds these microbes through her breast milk. So that's one way in which breast milk is very important in nourishing the right microbes in the gut. But of course, it contains immunologically active substances. It contains antibacterial components that then also regulate the growth of microbes that you don't want to grow. So there's positive ways, many positive ways in which breast milk regulates the development of the gut microbiota.
When it comes to the probiotics, when should they be taken?
That we don't really know exactly, but we do know that the earlier the restoration happens, the better it probably is, because there seems to be a pretty early time window in which we should try to get the microbiota development in the right track. But there isn't enough studies that would yet show when exactly the probiotics should be taken and for how long, so that we actually do not know.
Exactly. And why are there any risks in taking probiotics that we know of?
So generally, probiotics that are currently on the market are considered very safe. And they are even routinely given in some hospitals to preterm born infants. So there probably are very, very few risks. I think they are quite safe. If you give the right strains, you know that they are naturally infant gut strains, so they would normally be there anyway.
So it seems like there are things to be done after C-section and things that are quite safe and have little downsides and potentially a big upside. Why do you think this doesn't happen routinely? Why doesn't everyone know about this?
I think it's really what you just said. Not everyone knows yet about this. So we have learned a lot about this in the last few years, and we continue to learn more. So it's quite new information. So the information just hasn't reached everywhere yet. And of course, we don't have that many large-scale experimental studies that would show the health benefits. So those are difficult to conduct and still lacking. But I think the evidence summing together everything that we know now is sufficient to conclude that it would be beneficial to restore the gut microbiota of C-section babies using specific probiotics.
Exactly. What about fecal microbiota transplant? You've done several studies about this. What is it and how does it work?
Yeah, so fecal microbiota transplant is essentially giving fecal microbes from one person to another to transplant the microbes from one person's gut to another. And we have done this in infants. So we've given maternal microbes to a C-section born infant. And we've seen that that completely replicates the gut microbiota of a vaginally born baby. So the after this, the C-section born baby's gut microbiota does not look like a baby who was born by C-section, but it looks exactly like the gut microbiota born by a vaginally born baby. But in terms of practical relevance, I wouldn't say that this is the way to go in clinical practice. Obviously, it would require a lot of screening of the mothers to be sure that you are not transmitting anything harmful. And many mothers do eventually carry strains that might be potentially pathogenic. So many, many mothers are not eligible for this. So it's both difficult and it carries risks. And probably also unnecessary, because we do have already the key microbes, the probiotic microbes that are, you know, known to be safe and that probably can, you know, do 90% of the restoration. So it was an important experiment, but as a clinical, practical solution, I don't think it's really the way to go.
Exactly. It seems to be risky and more variable, also less controllable. In a way.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And there's also the question of, does every mother's microbiota have the optimal set of strains for every infant? And there's, of course, a lot of open questions about it as well.
Exactly. You mentioned that the two types of bacteria that are transferred mainly, or not mainly, but the most important ones are Bifidobacteria and Bacteroides. What do they do for the child in the first months and years of life?
The key characteristic of those two bacterial groups or genera is that they have the ability to utilize these human milk oligosaccharides, which tells us that they have a long evolutionary history in, you know, living in the infant gut, because they have evolved this ability to utilize the nutrient source that's available there. Most microbes cannot do that, but they can. So that tells us already that they are an important part of the infant gut microbiota. What they exactly do? Well, because they have the ability to utilize this abundant source of nutrients in the gut, they are sort of key species in unlocking this nutrient source that otherwise the other microbes wouldn't have access to. But now that they have the ability to start breaking down these sugars, they then provide other microbes also then the breakdown products. And through that, they also provide short-chain fatty acids that then go to the infant. And they can stimulate many metabolic processes in the infant through the production of these short-chain fatty acids, but also other metabolic products that they do. And we know, especially from Bifidobacteria, that through numerous studies, they are always associated with many kinds of positive later health effects. With Bacteroides, it's more variable. So we don't exactly know which exact species would be necessary and beneficial at which age in the infant. But regarding Bifidobacteria, we can quite safely say that they are generally very beneficially associated with later health outcomes.
What are the positive effects or lower risks in having high Bifidobacteria as a newborn?
So there are many. They are associated, for example, with lower risk of overweight in later life, lower risk of allergic diseases such as atopy. They are associated also, recent studies have looked at cognitive development, beneficial effects on that. So a wide range of beneficial health effects have been associated with Bifidobacteria specifically. So we can say quite conclusively that Bifidobacteria seems to be a very important component of the early life gut microbiota.
And it's fantastic that we have this information now and we're uncovering so much about it. Maybe as a last question, I wanted to share a bit of a personal reflection. I think that, you know, C-section antibiotics are things that have been great in improving our lifespan, really. You know, decades ago or a century ago, people would die from childbirth and from simple infections. And they have helped us so much in improving healthcare and our health span. But now I do believe that the big challenge we'll have in medicine and health will be to learn how to keep our gut populated with good bacteria and know how to live with microbes, because we are more and more living separated from these microbes, right? We live in clean environments, our food is packaged, it's very clean. I do believe that in the future, we'll need to overcome this challenge. What do you think about that?
Yeah, indeed. So antibiotics and C-sections are definitely very important and shouldn't be seen as a negative thing. We do need to learn to understand that they have an effect on our physiology, and that all microbes are not bad microbes. There are, we are adapted to living in together with a lot of microbes and a lot of microbial diversity. For when we're talking about infants, the absolutely most important microbes in early life are those that come from the mother during birth and then during breastfeeding. So for long-term health effects, we really should be focused on restoring and protecting the natural microbial transfer during birth and during infancy. And then the microbial exposures through food and through the environment, they are much, much less important, potentially important, obviously, later in life. But in the first months of life, the maternal microbes are really supporting the natural microbial transfer and development is critically important.
What do you believe will be the most promising paths to restoring the gut microbiome after C-section? And will it be probiotics? Will there be other avenues as well?
I think specific targeted infant gut restoration targeted probiotics, like cocktails of probiotics that have specifically been developed for the purpose of infant gut microbiota restoration, will be the way, and we are working towards that as well. So the probiotics that are currently on the market, they haven't been selected for that purpose. So they have been screened for many different kinds of health effects, immunological effects in adults. So not so much for the effects on the infant gut. And that's what we need to develop.
Fantastic. It sounds amazing. I'm really happy to hear that also research is progressing so much and we have more and more tools available really to make this happen. Thank you so much, Katri, for this great conversation. It's really great to see the latest research in this field. So thank you so much for sharing this with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I'm Nora Cavani and thank you for joining me on Healthy Gut, Healthy Kids, live on UK Health Radio. This episode was brought to you by Alba Health. We analyze your child's gut health, provide personalized nutrition plans and coaching for the best start in life. We are the first and only company with a large clinical study on child gut health, and our team counts over 1,600 scientific publications in this topic. We translate this complex science into simple, personalized actions for families. Thanks for listening and see you next time.